This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of distal radial ulnar joint injuries, or DRUJ injuries, from the trauma section on OrthoBullets.com. DRUJ injuries frequently occur with distal radius fractures but must be considered independently, and they are a common cause of pain and limited range of motion after distal radius fractures. They are often underappreciated and ignored. In this episode, we will review the etiology, relevant anatomy, clinical presentation, imaging findings, treatment options, some special considerations including ulnar styloid fractures, TFCC tears, ulnar impaction syndrome, Essex-Lopresti injuries, Galeazzi fractures, as well as the overall complications and prognosis of DRUJ injuries. Starting with the etiology, DRUJ injuries are associated with ulnar styloid and distal ulnar fractures, TFCC tears, ulnar impaction syndrome, Essex-Lopresti injuries, and Galeazzi fractures. With respect to the relevant anatomy regarding the DRUJ, it is important to discuss the arthrology, primary stabilizers, and the biomechanics of the DRUJ. With regards to the arthrology of the DRUJ, this articulation occurs between the ulnar head and the sigmoid notch of the radius, which is a shallow concavity found along the ulnar border of the distal radius. This articulation is noted to be most stable in supination. The primary stabilizers of the DRUJ are the volar and dorsal radial ulnar ligaments, as well as the TFCC. The TFCC attaches to the fovea at the base of the ulnar styloid, and its components include a central articular disc, a meniscal homologue, volar and dorsal radial ulnar ligaments, the ulnolunate and ulnotriquetral ligament origins, and the floor of the extensor carpi ulnaris tendon sheath. With regards to the biomechanics of the DRUJ, this joint motion includes both rotation and translation. On clinical presentation, patients with DRUJ injuries present with symptoms of pain and instability with an acute DRUJ dislocation. This may be associated with open distal radius fractures. In patients with post-traumatic arthritis, one may see dorsal wrist pain and limited pronosupination. On physical exam, post-traumatic arthritis may be noted with snapping and crepitus, and proximal rotation of the forearm with compression of the ulna against the radius elicits pain. Patients may also be noted to have decreased grip strength. Reviewing imaging findings, radiographs should be taken with AP showing widening of the DRUJ and lateral showing dorsal displacement. On the lateral, instability of the DRUJ is present when the ulnar head is subluxed from the sigmoid notch by its full width with the arm in neutral rotation. A dynamic CT may be useful in the diagnosis of subtle chronic DRUJ instability. On these studies, sequential CT scans are performed with the forearm in neutral and full supination and pronation. Greater than 50% translation compared to the contralateral side is considered abnormal. An MRI may also be useful in the identification of TFCC injuries. Treatment of DRUJ injuries may be either non-operative or operative. Non-operative intervention with close reduction and immobilization is indicated for DRUJ instability resulting from purely ligamentous injuries. These techniques involve close reduction and immobilization in a position of stability for 4 weeks. It is important to note that dorsal instability is stable with the forearm in supination, while volar instability is stable with the forearm in pronation. Outcomes of non-operative treatment are limited by interposition of the extensor carpi ulnaris, which may impede closed reduction. On the other hand, operative intervention with DRUJ pinning or radial ulnar ligament repair is indicated for highly unstable DRUJ injuries, and this technique involves pinning across the joint with a 0.062-inch K-wire. We will now discuss more specifics on some special circumstances including ulnar styloid fractures, TFCC tears, ulnar impaction syndrome, Essex-Lopresti injuries, and Galeazzi fractures. Ulnar styloid fractures reflect a high degree of initial fracture displacement, and fractures through the base are often associated with a TFCC rupture and instability. In the absence of instability, ulnar styloid nonunions are not associated with any worse outcome. The treatment of ulnar styloid fractures may be either non-operative or operative as well, with non-operative treatment in cast immobilization indicated in non-displaced fractures proximal to the ulnar styloid. Operative intervention with open reduction internal fixation or symptomatic fragment excision is indicated for displaced fractures through the base of the ulnar styloid with associated instability, as well as for sigmoid notch fractures, Galeazzi fracture patterns, and TFCC avulsions in the face of an unstable DRUJ. When treating ulnar styloid fractures, this technique should preserve the ulnar attachments of the TFCC even with fragment excision. Moving on to address TFCC tears, the etiology of TFCC tears relates to a mechanism of injury with the wrist in extension and the forearm in pronation. In pronation, the volar ligaments prevent dorsal subluxation, while in supination, the dorsal ligaments prevent volar subluxation. TFCC tears may be classified as type 1 and type 2. Type 1 TFCC tears are traumatic in nature, while type 2 TFCC tears are degenerative due to ulnocarpal impaction. Type 2 injuries are further subclassified into type 2A through E injuries. Type 2A injuries include TFCC thinning. Type 2B injuries are type 2A injuries in addition to having lunate and or ulnar chondromalacia. Type 2C injuries are type 2B injuries with the addition of TFCC perforations. Type 2D injuries are type 2C injuries with the additional lunar triquetral ligament disruption. And type 2E injuries are type 2D injuries with the addition of ulnocarpal and DRUJ arthritis. Treatment of TFCC tears is generally non-operative or operative as well, with non-operative interventions indicated with immobilization and NSAIDs being indicated for all acute traumatic TFCC tears. Operative intervention with arthroscopic versus open debridement or repair is indicated for the failure of non-operative management and persistent symptoms. Operative technique differs for type 1 or type 2 injuries, with type 1 injuries being performed with arthroscopic versus open debridement and or repair, and type 2 injuries being treated with the TFCC pathology being treated with arthroscopic or open debridement, and then ulnar carpal impaction being treated with ulnar shortening osteotomy in the absence of DRUJ arthrosis, or wafer resection of the ulnar head. With regards to ulnar impaction syndrome, this is due to radial shortening which leads to positive ulnar variance and altered biomechanics. The sequelae of ulnar impaction syndrome include lunate chondromalacia and degenerative TFCC tears. The operative treatment for ulnar impaction syndrome includes TFCC debridement, radial osteotomy, ulnar shortening osteotomy, distal ulnar resection, otherwise known as the wafer procedure, which should still preserve the ulnar attachment of the TFCC. Moving on to discuss Essex-Lopresti injuries, these are radial head fractures with an interosseous membrane injury extending to the DRUJ. There is an unstable relationship between the ulna and the radius in these injuries that leads to proximal migration of the radius. This results in secondary DRUJ pathology and ulnocarpal abutment. Treatment of Essex-Lopresti injuries involves treatment of the bony pathology, such as the radial head or shaft fractures, with pinning of the DRUJ for 6 weeks in neutral to facilitate ligamentous healing. If pinning fails or the initial injury is missed, radial head replacement may be required. Lastly, with respect to Galeazzi fractures, these are fractures of the distal one-third of the radius in association with a DRUJ injury. There may be ECU entrapment, which may cause the DRUJ to be irreducible. Treatment of Galeazzi fractures may also be either non-operative or operative. Non-operative intervention with a splint in supination is indicated rarely for stable injuries. Operative intervention with radial head open reduction internal fixation and DRUJ pinning is indicated and often required to achieve a stable reduction. Regarding the complications and prognosis of DRUJ injuries, DRUJ arthrosis is the most common complication, and treatment of DRUJ arthrosis is with resection arthroplasty, otherwise known as distal ulnar resection, hemiresection or interposition arthroplasty, the Suave-Kapanji procedure, ulnar head prosthetic replacement, or the creation of a one-bone forearm. With respect to the resection arthroplasty option, matched resection versus a derrage procedure may be compared, with a derrage procedure being reserved for low-demand elderly patients, as an unstable, painful proximal ulna stump may result. In hemiresection or interposition arthroplasty, the ulnar insertion of the TFCC is preserved, and radial ulnar impingement is prevented by soft tissue interposition. In the Suave-Kapanji procedure, a DRUJ fusion is performed with the creation of a proximal ulnar neck pseudoarthrosis. And lastly, creation of a one-bone forearm is the ultimate salvage procedure that eliminates forearm rotation. The prognosis of DRUJ injuries is generally good, and the primary method to prevent disability related to DRUJ injuries is anatomic reduction of the distal radius, which often results in an anatomically reduced DRUJ. Now that we've gotten a general overview of this topic, let's review a couple questions to see how this material has been tested in the past. Question 1. A 29-year-old female presents to the trauma bay from the scene of a high-speed motor vehicle accident. She is found to have a closed intra-articular distal radius fracture with a concomitant ulnar styloid base fracture. She subsequently undergoes open reduction internal fixation of the distal radius fracture with a volar locking plate. The ulnar styloid fracture is not addressed. Which of the following, if present, is least likely to affect functional outcomes? 1. Ulnar styloid non-union. 2. DRUJ instability. 3. Articular step-off greater than 3 millimeters. 4. Radial shortening. Or 5. Workers' compensation claim. The correct answer is 1. An ulnar styloid non-union. Ulnar styloid non-unions do not affect the overall outcome of hand or wrist function following ORIF of distal radius fractures. Ulnar styloid base fractures can be associated with DRUJ disruption and TFCC injury. The DRUJ should be independently evaluated following ORIF of the distal radius. Without instability, ulnar styloid fractures do not need to be addressed. However, if instability exists, the DRUJ should be treated as a separate entity, and it is typically cross-pinned using K-wires. The result of ulnar styloid non-unions are inconsequential to the overall outcome of patients undergoing distal radius ORIF. Dineshvar et al. Reviewed the effects of ulnar styloid fractures on patients sustaining distal radius fractures. They report that patients with a concomitant ulnar styloid fracture had a slower recovery of wrist flexion and grip strength compared to those with an isolated distal radius fracture. They conclude, however, that even the presence of an ulnar styloid non-union did not significantly affect outcomes. Bouygues et al. Review the clinical impact of united versus non-united fractures of the proximal half of the ulnar styloid following volar plate fixation of the distal radius. They report no difference in motion, strength, or outcome scores between the united and non-united groups at 6 months follow-up. They conclude that non-unions of the ulnar styloid do not have an effect on the overall outcome of hand or wrist function. With regards to the incorrect answers, answer 2 is incorrect, as unrecognized DRUJ instability leads to decreased pronosupination and post-traumatic arthritis. Answer 3, an articular step-off greater than 3 millimeters, is incorrect, as with 1 to 2 millimeters of an articular step-off, 90% of young adults will develop radial ulnar arthrosis. Answer 4 is incorrect, as radial shortening is one of the most important factors for predicting poor functional outcomes following distal radius ORIF. And answer 5 is incorrect, as workers' compensation claims have a negative impact on functional outcomes following fixation of the distal radius. Next question. Radiographs of a 58-year-old female who sustained a ground-level fall reveal distal radius and distal ulnar fractures. The decision is made to proceed with operative stabilization of the distal radius. Which of the following findings would indicate the need for distal ulna fixation? 1. The degree of angulation of the ulnar styloid fracture. 2. The degree of comminution of the ulnar styloid fracture. 3. Location of the ulnar styloid fracture. 4. Size of the ulnar styloid fracture. Or 5. Intraoperative distal radial ulnar joint instability. The correct answer is 5. Intraoperative distal radial ulnar joint instability. This patient sustained a distal radius and ulnar fracture. The presence of intraoperative distal radial ulnar joint instability may necessitate distal ulna fixation. DRUJ injuries are often underappreciated and are associated with ulnar styloid fractures and distal ulna fractures, TFCC tears, ulnar impraction syndrome, Essex-Lopresti injuries, and Galeazzi fractures. The primary stabilizers of the DRUJ include the volar and dorsal radial ulnar ligaments and the TFCC. The primary method to prevent disability related to DRUJ injuries is anatomic reduction of the distal radius, which often results in an anatomically reduced DRUJ. A distal ulna fracture with an associated DRUJ injury may require distal ulna fixation or fragment excision. Indications for either operative fixation or fragment excision include displaced fractures through the base with associated instability, sigmoid notch fractures, Galeazzi fracture patterns, and TFCC avulsions in the face of an unstable DRUJ. May et al. Retrospectively reviewed distal radius fractures with concomitant ulnar-sided injuries. They found that all distal radius fractures complicated by DRUJ instability were accompanied by an ulnar styloid fracture. They concluded that a fracture at the ulnar styloid's base and significant displacement of an ulnar styloid fracture were found to increase the risk of DRUJ instability. Sammer et al. Evaluated the outcome of ulnar styloid fractures without DRUJ instability on patient-rated outcomes after distal radius fracture open reduction internal fixation. They reported that in 88 patients with an ulnar styloid fracture, DRUJ instability was found intraoperatively in 3 patients. They concluded that in patients with a stable DRUJ after distal radius fracture ORIF, ulnar styloid fractures did not affect subjective outcomes. Wysocki et al. Reported on an active 54-year-old woman who sustained an extra-articular distal radius fracture with a concomitant ulnar styloid base fracture. They reported that they are more likely to consider volar plate fixation of the radius in the presence of an ulnar styloid base fracture. They concluded that if the DRUJ is stable after fixation of the radius, then neither repair nor immobilization of the ulnar styloid fracture is needed, regardless of the size or displacement. If there is DRUJ instability after volar plate fixation, then ORIF of the ulnar styloid base fracture is recommended. Regarding the incorrect answers, the degree of angulation of the ulnar styloid fracture, degree of comminution of the ulnar styloid fracture, location of the ulnar styloid fracture, and size of the ulnar styloid fracture are all incorrect, as these factors may be associated with DRUJ instability, but do not alone provide indication for distal ulna fixation. However, the intraoperative presence of DRUJ instability may merit the need for distal ulna fixation. That is all for this review about DRUJ injuries. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or the mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Also, if you are not already, please be sure to follow OrthoBullets on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for daily high-yield content. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow, right here on the OrthoBullets podcast.